morning, everybody. My name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic. Marty, thank you so much for asking me down here. Marty's been a good friend though, over the years. And I want to thank the district too for supporting this, supporting things like this. I believe very, very strongly I believe we need to know a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. I think we owe it to ourselves and to the people that we try to help to understand where we came from, to understand our service structure, to understand the fellowship, and to understand the program. And I think it's very, 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 very important for us to understand the differences and to understand that we need to be playing a role in all three of the parts of our triangle. Back when I first got sober, all of the big books that were published had a circle and a triangle right in the beginning. And that circle and that triangle basically represented unity. That's the fellowship, recovery. That's the 12 steps as they're laid out in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and service. And Bill Wilson himself used to do a little talk. He used to do the three-legged stool talk. And he would be talking about if you have a stool with only two legs, you got a good chance of falling on your ass. If you got a stool with one leg, you're definitely going to fall on your ass. And so basically what he was trying to tell us is that we need to have a balanced recovery life. It needs to have recovery in it. We need to actually take the 12 steps, not just agree with them in theory. We need to become consistent with meetings and become a part of a home group, part of a fellowship. And we need to develop a service ethic. It's very, very important to the recovery program to develop a service ethic, because I believe it's through our expression of compassion and charity and love that heals our spirit. I believe alcoholism is a spiritual malady. I used to think I was an alcoholic because I drank too much. I now believe that I drank too much because I'm an alcoholic. And that's two very, very different things. Listen, folks, the science is in. Alcoholism is a genetic bullet. It is not causal. It doesn't happen because you drink a lot. There's a lot of people that drink a lot that do not become alcoholic. What happens with us is we have spiritual characteristics that leads us into a life where we become dependent upon alcohol to solve our problems and to allow us to feel comfortable. I'll give you a for instance. My job here today is to talk about recovery, so I'm gonna talk a little bit about what is the problem, because without understanding the problem of alcoholism, you're gonna have little impetus to move forward in the recovery process. If you don't understand the problem, you're gonna be working on the wrong solution. I'll give you a for instance before I get started. You do not treat alcoholism with sobriety. This is the first thing that Bill and Dr. Bob learned. They had tried to treat alcoholism with sobriety so many times, and it never worked. Yes, they could get sober, but they could never stay sober. You treat alcoholism with spiritual exercises, with spiritual living. That's what they discovered in the early days. That's what they used to put the book Alcoholics Anonymous together. And I understand this at an experiential level today. The first time alcoholism manifested in my life was my mother came in. I'm about 5 years old. My mother came into the room and she said, get your clothes on, you know, get ready. It's your first day at kindergarten. And I said, what? You know, and she said, just get ready. And she dragged me out and put me in the car, drove me across town, opened up the door, said, there's the school building, go. And I got to tell you, I was freaking out inside. All right, I had anxiety like you wouldn't even believe. I'm worried about what the other kids are going to think about me. I'm worried about what if I'm not cool? What if I do something stupid? What if I get beat up? I mean, all of this self-centered fear is just all over me. Now, why do I think that was alcoholic? Because I'll tell you what would have cured that whole thing. Give me a half a pint of whiskey, and I'd have been the kindergarten kid. You know what I mean? Alcohol was a solution for me. It was not a problem. It was a solution that turned on me. Because alcohol worked for me for quite a while. It got rid of that self-centered fear. You know what I mean? And it got to the point, I'll tell a little story about, this is like the last couple of years of my drinking this happened. I had a liquor store. I was a chronic alcoholic. I drank at least a quart of hard liquor a night on a work night. If it was a weekend, I would pass out, come to, drink myself into a blackout, pass out, come to. You know, I'd get drunk about like five times on a weekend and try to pull out of it on Sunday to be able to get to work. But I was a chronic, critical, every single day blackout drinker that had to be detoxed if I was to pull away from alcohol. That's how bad it got. But I would get off of work and I'd be like, you know, I got to get to the liquor store. And I'd drive my $100 car down the road and I'd get to the liquor store and I'd run in and the guy who owned the liquor store knew what I needed. I was either drinking Gordon's vodka or I was drinking George Dickel bourbon, depending on the time of year. And he knew not to let that crap run out. You know what I mean? We had an understanding. I remember this one time I get in there and I grab my bottle, you know, and I got my 20 bucks or whatever, and I head up and I'm going to pay for it and I'm going to get the hell out of it and I'm going to get home and I'm going to start drinking. And all of a sudden, he's talking to somebody in line. It's like a woman in line. And she's going, "Do you know what kind of wine goes with tilapia?" And I'm like, "What? You know, you got a vodka buyer here, you know, move this lady on." And he's going, "Well, there's a Chablis from the California vineyards that has quite a nice blush." And I'm freaking out. I'm like, "Are you crazy? Give that lady a bottle of Gallo and get her the hell out of my way. I got a problem. I got a problem. I'm sober." You know what I mean? I got to start drinking. I got to get out of here. Now, does that sound like alcohol is the problem for me? No. The problem is I'm a basket case spiritually all the time, emotionally a wreck, spiritually, you know, a shambles. I got a $100 car. You know, I mean, I can't. I just shoot myself in the foot. Every 5 seconds, I'm shooting myself in the foot. Because I'm drinking gallons of hard liquor. You know, you get in a lot of trouble when you do that. I had DUIs. I crashed 9 cars in drunken blackouts. I mean, lost families, you know, and that was when it was still working. You know, toward the end, it got really, bad. You know? So anyway, what is my problem? The book Alcoholics Anonymous is beautiful. I love the book Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? I love it. I think that's really the only literature, you know, I think we need for the recovery process. It talks about my problem. My problem is, on a good day, I'm restless, I'm irritable, I'm discontented. On a regular day, I'm prey to misery, depression, anxiety, self-centered fear, guilt, shame, and remorse. That's a regular day. On a bad day, it's pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. The hideous four horsemen: terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair. I know that at least most of the people in this room understand those states of mind because we've experienced them. All right? That's alcoholism. The big book says alcohol is but a symbol. It's a symptom of alcoholism. Alcoholism is that monstrously messed up spiritual condition that we have. All right? How do you treat that? How do you treat that? Listen, if you just take booze away from me, being the kind of alcoholic I was, if you just take booze away from me, I am going to rattle to pieces. I am not going to have the escape. I'm not going to have that 5 minutes between, you know, 7 drinks and becoming a puking animal. That 5 minutes worth of peace that I get, you know, in that blissful state before, you know, unconsciousness. I'm not going to have that anymore. I'm just going to be stark raving sober with all of that spiritual crap just all over me. You know, I do a lot of work with alcoholics. I've been to a million meetings, and I can, you know, you see the newcomer walk in and they're shattered in 100 different ways. You know, alcoholism's on them. And somebody will go up and say, kid, you just don't drink and go to meetings. And they think, you got to be kidding me. You know, you got to have something better than that. You know, I am an absolute mess. Are you kidding me? You know, listen, we do have something better than that. Okay. If you're new, just coming back, or have not gone through the 12 steps, I know two things about you that you're not going to believe. One of them is you're in way more trouble than you think you are. Alcoholism is the most aggressive illness I've ever seen in my life. It kills people that don't even have it. You know, DUIs, and I burnt my house down a couple of times. You know, I could have killed people. It's an ugly, ugly illness. So you're going to be in way more trouble than you think you are. You know, alcoholism, you think that it's just the alcohol and just the problems you get in when you're drinking. No, it's your personal relationships. It's why you have $5 in your pocket is alcoholism. You know, why you don't have good relationships is alcoholism. Why your friends aren't loyal, that's alcoholism. All that stuff is an expression of active alcoholism. So you're in way more trouble than you think you are. Now, the other thing that you're not going to believe is true is Alcoholics Anonymous has a much bigger answer than you're giving it credit for right now. You're coming to a few meetings. You're listening to a few people share. You're not even seeing the tip of the iceberg. Alcoholics Anonymous, when you apply the 12 steps, the recovery process in your life, it's transformational. That restlessness, that irritability, that discontent, gone. Misery, depression, anxiety, self-centered fear, guilt, shame, remorse, gone. I mean, it'll come back, you know, in normal situations that normal people experience, but it's not crippling the way it is when you're an alcoholic, you know. And you're going to start to, because you're going to be a better employee, you're going to start to become more employable. Because you're going to be a better partner, you're going to get better partners. You know, it's all going to start to work when you experience the recovery process. But understand, the recovery process is essential. Do not think that Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of meeting attendance. Do not think that. Meetings do not treat alcoholism. Meetings, what they do is they create an atmosphere, a sober atmosphere, where if we're lucky, we can get exposed to the recovery process of the 12 steps, become inspired to do them, and have somebody show us how to go through the 12 steps. If we're lucky. If we're lucky, that's what will happen, and we'll actually recover from alcoholism. On the title page of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, we're 100 men and women who have seemingly recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. You can recover from alcoholism. I know that because I'm a recovered alcoholic myself. I'm not saying I am a cured alcoholic. Those are two completely different things. But I don't suffer from the symptoms of alcoholism anymore. I don't suffer from those symptoms. So I call that a state called recovery. I am not cured of alcoholism because if you put alcohol in my body, 5 minutes later, I'm going to be a drunken, drooling, you know, loser, just like I was back in the 80s. It can happen like that. And if I let up on the maintenance of my spiritual condition by doing the things that the 12 steps teach me to do, my spiritual condition will deteriorate to the point where everything will fall apart. And if I don't end up drunk, I'll take my own life. Or I'll go crazy. That's what happens with alcoholics without a spiritual solution. We're 60 times more likely to take our own life than non-alcoholics. You know, that's why there's that little box on your life insurance application. They want to know that. Okay, it makes a big difference to them. Now, what is recovery? Recovery is the 12 steps. Step one, as an alcoholic, I must understand three things. One is, I have an obsession of the mind. What happens with the obsession of the mind is I cannot make a decision to stay away from alcohol and have that mean anything. Every single morning I woke up in my last 3 or 4 years of drinking, I swore off alcohol. Tonight is the night I'm not going to drink. Today is the day I'm not going to drink. And I would be drunk before 7 o'clock that night. I could not make a decision to stay away from alcohol. The big book in the chapter, more about alcoholism, and there is a solution, talks about the utter inability of the alcoholic at certain times to have a mental defense against alcohol. Certain times we cannot just swear off alcohol and have that mean anything. If we can just say I'm done and you're done and you have no spiritual program or anything like that, you're not an alcoholic of the big book variety. So I can't stay away from alcohol. And the other part of the first step is once I start drinking, the phenomenon of craving or the allergy of alcohol takes over. And this is what always happens. One drink always does one thing to me. It asks for a second drink. Second drink insists on the third. The third demands the fourth. And the more alcohol in my body, the more craving I have for more alcohol. That's why I drink myself into unconsciousness when I drink. I pass out every time. It's because the more alcohol in my body, the more that phenomenon of craving. That's what alcoholics have. So, two big problems. One of them is when I'm not drinking, and one of them is when I'm drinking. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't really have too much of a problem. You know what I mean? But it's worse than that, because there's a dash after in step one, our powerlessness over alcohol, dash that our lives have become unmanageable. What is the unmanageability of our lives? The restlessness, the irritability, the discontent, the misery, the depression, the anxiety, the guilt, the shame, the remorse, the totally feeling uncomfortable with yourself and your environment. That's what the unmanageability is. I used to think the unmanageability was all the cars I crashed. Yeah. Listen, a non-alcoholic drinking as much alcohol as I drank would crash cars. It has nothing to do with whether I'm an alcoholic or not. Whether I went to a treatment center has nothing to do with whether I'm an alcoholic or not. Whether I got thrown in jail for being drunk and disorderly has nothing to do with whether I'm an alcoholic. Whether I drank every single night has nothing to do with whether I'm an alcoholic or not. The definition of an alcoholic is the obsession of the mind, not being able to stop even when you honestly want to, and finding that you cannot manage the amount once you start. That's what an alcoholic is. You can be a wine drinker sitting at home, never got in any trouble ever, and be a stone alcoholic. And you can be in prison for 14 DUIs and not be an alcoholic. The defining terms are obsession of the mind, allergy of the body, unmanageability. That's what makes an alcoholic. Big Book is very clear on this. Step two, come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I really love this step. I so misunderstood this step when I came in. I saw it up on the wall and I said, oh my God, I'm going to have to shave my head and sell flowers at the airport. I'm done. Kill me now. You know, they shoot horses, don't they? You know, just put me out of my misery. I got to sit in a church basement talking about God during primetime TV every single night. You know, kill me. If you study the descriptions of God in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll find something very, very interesting. Bill Wilson was influenced by some really modern thinkers. It was called the New Thought. New Thought. It was like Christian Science and a couple of other things that were going on in the 30s. But it was basically New Thought. And I love this because Bill Wilson's descriptions of God are less... They're less apt to be something you would consider a noun and more apt to be something you would consider a verb. In other words, he spoke about God as being a power. He spoke about God as being a presence, you know. And I believe in this because I've experienced it in my own life many, many times. I've experienced a power greater than myself doing for me what I could not do for myself. I've personally experienced this. Have I ever personally experienced a God sitting on a throne up in heaven, you know, with the good of book and evil, you know? No, that's fairy tale, kindergarten, nursery school stuff. But I have experienced the power of God. The power of God brought me back from the gates of death and insanity with alcoholism. I've experienced this. So I know that there's a power. I can come to believe that there's a power that can work in me and through me if I rightly relate myself to that power working the rest of the steps. I know that for a fact. I work with a lot of people. It's all of our experience. It's all of our experience that we can achieve a state where that power can work in us and through us, keep us safe and protected from the next drink or the next drug, and enable us to really start putting our lives together. You know, and I liken it like this: if I do the best I can, taking the steps, practicing the spiritual principles, doing what I'm asked to do, doing my job in Alcoholics Anonymous, what will happen is I'll be placed in the sunlight of the Spirit. And that sunlight can heal me in 45 different ways. I just need to always remember that I can place myself in the sunlight of the Spirit, but I'm not the sun. You know, there is a power greater than myself. Most of us call that power God. I don't even think it's necessary to call that power God, really. I think it's necessary to experience that power. Or if you really are an alcoholic, you're just not going to make it. Because alcoholism is much too aggressive to be treated by meetings, by therapy, by psychiatrists, by medication. It's much too aggressive. You need a real serious program of recovery if you have alcoholism. So in step three, basically I need to say to myself, all right, I believe that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. I believe. In step three, we make a decision. We make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. What does Bill mean by that? I believe what he means is we make a decision to let go of some of our old ideas. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous is so much more about letting go of your old ideas than it really is picking up new ones. I mean, we come into AA, and if you're an alcoholic and you were anything like me, you come into AA really thinking you know. Really thinking you know. And 99% of the stuff you know is wrong. And it's really, really difficult because of our egos. It's really difficult for us to let go of some of these old ideas. You know, for me to change my mind, you know, like the earth would stop its rotation, you know, if I was to change my mind. It was back in the day. But I need to change my mind about this stuff. And then step three, I make a decision to work the rest of the 12 steps to start to develop a relationship with the power that's keeping me sober at that particular moment. And to move forward with this Alcoholics Anonymous stuff, you know, and to be open to new spiritual terms, to be open to new information. You know, it begs us in the big book to lay aside our prejudices, even against organized religion, to be open to new ideas. One of the things that kills alcoholics and keeps alcoholics from coming in and embracing Alcoholics Anonymous are these old ideas. There's at least 10 million people in North America who've come through Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you ask them what their experience was, they will tell you, it wasn't for me, it didn't work. Okay, there's at least 10 million people that will tell you it didn't work, and there's maybe 2-3 million of us in Alcoholics Anonymous at this point in time that will say different. So there's more people out there that will tell you this doesn't work than it does. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. The path is the steps. Here's basically what happened. I got in an argument one time. I do a lot of work with the professional addiction and alcoholism treatment communities. I'm a board member of the NCADD and all kinds of other stuff like that. And I get involved with a lot of really, 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 really cool people at the upper levels of alcoholism and addiction treatment. And I know what that stuff can do, and I know what it can't do. But anyway, I got in an argument with this guy one time. This guy was an addiction psychiatrist. This is somebody that you pay $200 an hour to go to when you're alcoholic and you're in trouble, and they'll shrink your head. Now, he's on this LinkedIn group and he's trashing Alcoholics Anonymous. Now listen, I love Alcoholics Anonymous to the core of my being. AA saved my life. And there's nothing else out there that would have been powerful enough to help me except for AA. So I get pissed when people, you know, are writing bad stuff about us. So I get into it with him. I call him a couple of insults and he shoots me an email back and he goes, "Chris, I don't send anybody to Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. I don't send them to Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. Alcoholics Anonymous has what, a 6% recovery rate? I could get better results prescribing placebos." That's what this addiction psychiatrist says. I'm like, I'm horrified, okay? Oh, are you kidding me? So, but listen, you know, rather than just write back what I wanted to tell the guy he was, I started to think about it. And you know, it is true. There are people who do surveys of AA. They go into like New York City or you know, and they stand by the door, and when people are walking in and out of the AA meeting, you know, "Would you do a quick anonymous survey?" You know, and they'll do these surveys. And it is true that the people who walk in and out of the doors have about a 6% chance of being there in, say, 5 years, 2 years, 5 years. It's about a 6% recovery, right? That's true. But you know what else is true? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So I've got to make an argument with this guy. So this is basically what I do. I write him back and I say, "Listen, you're an MD. Let's say you come up with a recovery process for cancer, and you're absolutely sure that this recovery process is going to heal your cancer. All right, and you get a hospital to support you, and you open a clinic, and 100 people go to that clinic with that cancer, and you know this is going to work, and 90 of them sit in the waiting room and talk about their cancer and share about their cancer, and they get a coffee maker, you know, and they get a cancer sponsor, and they're grateful that they've got cancer, okay? But they never go in to get the operation. Only 10% of the people go in to get the operation. But the 10% who go in get cured." I go, "Would you say that you've got a 10% recovery rate?" And he said, "No, I would only count the people that go in for the operation." I go, "Well, you're counting the people in the waiting room. You're counting the people that are going in and out of the meetings. Meetings don't treat alcoholism. Just going to meetings is not going to recover you from alcoholism. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You need to do the steps." So I never heard from him again once I explained this to him, because, you know, he didn't want to change his mind. But I believe this. I believe this. It's my personal experience. If I sponsor you, you're going through the steps, or I'm going to make you so uncomfortable you're going to go somewhere else. And either one of those outcomes is fine with me. You know what I mean? I am not going to be about the business of being a drama coach for you, helping you manage an already unmanageable life. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I am going to take you through the steps, and that's my job as a sponsor. My job is not to help you get jobs or, you know, agree with you that your girlfriend is being, you know, unreasonable. That's not my job. My job is to get you through the steps. And if you don't want to go through the steps, God bless you. Here's my phone number. Go in peace. But don't waste my time or yours anymore, because I only know one way to recover from alcoholism. So in step three, I make the decision to do that. I've got to go through the rest of these steps. Has anybody in here ever asked you this question? What's wrong with you? Have you ever heard that? Okay. Let the record state that every single person in here is nodding their head. All right? If you do not do a four step with a resentment list, a fear list, and a conduct list, if you never do that, you will never know what's wrong with you. You will have the wrong idea about what your problem is. You'll have the wrong idea about what alcoholism is, and you will be working on the wrong problem. If you don't understand the problem, you'll be working on the wrong solution. Okay. In step four, I have to look at who am I angry with? What institutions, principles, and people am I angry with? We all know who we're angry with, but we need to look at it. We need to dig deep into it. We need to understand why we're angry. And we're angry because we're being threatened. Aspects of our lives are being threatened. Personal relationships, sex relations, security, ambitions, self-esteem, pride, those are the areas of self that get threatened, interfered, or harmed. And that's why we get mad. So we need to see the truth about this. We need to see the truth about it. In our fears, we need to look at our fears. Where do our fears come from? It says in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, fear is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of your existence is shot through with it. It causes chains of circumstances that just completely mess up your life in 400 different ways. So if fear is that devastating, we need to look at how to get rid of it. Then we need to look at our conduct. Our conduct is how we comport ourselves. There's an emphasis on sex in the big book, Resentment Inventory, and I understand why. Because there's no area in our life, like our intimate relationships, where we blow up the whole scene more. And we are unbelievably, devastatingly bad at these types of relationships. The big book says we need an overhauling with our sex relationships, and overhauling. So we need to look at all this because our anger, our fear, and our conduct, that's the big Megillah. Those are the mistakes we're making in life. And we need to understand them so we can start working on the right problem. And now, you know, when you look at all that stuff, when somebody says, what's wrong with you, you'll at least know. I never knew, like people would say, what is wrong with you? You just lost your license for you know, years. And here you are driving with a bottle of vodka between your legs again. What is the matter with you? Sometimes I didn't know how to answer questions like that. I actually went to the Motor Vehicle Bureau one time to get my license back for a third DUI. I drove there drunk. To get my license back for a third DUI. The woman had to give me the slip because I had everything, you know, all my ducks were in a row, and she smelled me, and she's like, are you crazy? You're getting your license back. You say, I can smell vodka all over you. Are you nuts? And I'm like, what? You know, like we can't even, what's wrong with you? You know? I swear, it's like, we swing the light, you know? Please don't look at me. It's not me. And we're completely insane. So I need to look at this in the fourth step. I have to do an inventory. There are warnings in our book that if you don't do a fourth and a fifth step and you are an alcoholic, you're going to get drunk. You're going to get drunk. So if you've never done a fourth and a fifth step and you're sober in AA, you're probably in the wrong room. You should probably be across the street over here at Allen. The fifth step, I am isolated. I am alone. I am Planet Chris. And you guys are satellites orbiting. You're like alkanauts orbiting around my planet. And every single decision, every single perception, every single belief system I have relates to how you can benefit me. You know what I mean? It's the sickest of sick. We're so sick we don't even know we're sick. Everything is about us. I love the newcomer when they come in. Oh, no, you wouldn't believe. Oh, my God, all of my doubt. You wouldn't believe. It's like so about them. It's like, you know, alcoholism is self-centeredism is really what it is. That's what alcoholism is. And I love the closed-minded discussion meetings where they ask, has anybody got a problem? You know, I love those meetings. Does anybody got a problem? Yes! They all have problems, probably. You know what I mean? Oh my God. But anyway, in step five, I have got to share this stuff with somebody. I've got to be honest with somebody about what's going on with me. My first experience doing a fifth step was my first sponsor and I went to the park and we were walking his dogs and I was reading from my list. And I was, you know, oh, I resent my mother. You know, I'm reading from this list. And I felt like such a scumbag. I mean, I'd put all this stuff down on paper, all of my mistakes, all of the dirty little secrets, all of my character defects, you know, all the people I'd hurt. I put it all down on this fifth step, this fourth step list, and I'm reading it to the guy, and I'm feeling terrible. And I finally get done. I get done, and here's what he says to me. He goes, "That's not so bad." I'm like, I thought that was enormous. I thought if there's a hell, I'll be there, you know, for eternities. You know, I really thought I was a scumbag, an absolute scumbag. Not a normal, run-of-the-mill scumbag. You know, I was special. I had a special scumbag characteristics. But I really thought I was a scumbag. And my sponsor said, no. He goes, listen, Chris. I believe that you were an alcoholic before you even drank. I believe that you were like a campfire that had burned down. It was like red embers, and it was just kind of smoldering. And along comes a bottle of alcohol, and you, when you start drinking, it was like throwing gasoline on that fire, and it burnt, you know, the flames came up and it burnt you and everybody close to you. He goes, listen, right now you're making a really serious effort to get your to work on your life, to work on your alcoholism, to work on your character defects. You're trying to become a better person. Lighten up on yourself, you know? And for the first moment in my life, I really felt like I was part of humanity. I really started to feel like I was, you know, a person among persons instead of this isolated, you know, Chris entity. And I, there's a big, huge piece of starting to heal my spirit, you know, after this fifth step. I've done many since, and they're all positive experiences. Now, in step six, it says, become willing to have God remove these character defects. And in step seven, it says, humbly ask God to remove these defects of character. In step four, I identified what my character defects are. Step five, I shared about them. Step six, I become willing to have God to remove them. And in step seven, I need to ask God to remove them. Now, I believe that our character defects are like our alcoholism or are our alcoholism. And we need God's help to get over them. Well, you know, listen, we come from a self-help book culture. Anybody in here buy self-help books before you got into AA? Anybody in here buy self-help books after you've been in AA? Anybody in here buy a lot of self-help books? I mean, you know, we're about the business of trying to help ourselves. The problem is if we're an alcoholic, we can't. Listen, our character defects are bigger than we are. We can't just overcome them because we wish to. You know, I was wrong about this for a long time. I thought, okay, you know, I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, that's the root of my troubles. I won't be selfish anymore. That'll last about 5 minutes. You know, my character defects are so ingrained in me, they're so deep, and they're so powerful, I need God's help. I need God's help to remove these defects of character. You know, I'm telling you, working on your own character defects, I liken it to playing whack-a-mole. Anybody in here ever seen the game whack-a-mole? Where you got the mallet and, you know, a mole's head will pop up and you know, just as you're whacking one of those moles, another one's popping up. You're never going to get them all, right? That's the way our character defects are, you know, and we're whacking the mole if we're trying to work on our own character defects. And my sponsor told me if you keep whacking the mole, you could go blind. So you don't want to do that. So what you have to do is you have to engage this power. In step two, we came to believe that there's a power that we can engage. That power has kept us sober up to this point, right? So that power, that's the same power that can help us with these character defects. So we've identified the character defects. We've asked God to remove these defects of character. What's the next thing that we need to do? Next thing we need to do is become willing to make amends to the people and the institutions that those character defects have harmed. You know, this is not great news if you just walk through the door and you look at the steps up on the wall you know, made amends. Oh, no, I can't do that. The good news is if you haven't worked steps 1 through 8, you're not going to have the power to do amends anyway. You know, each step gives you the power to be able to complete the next one. You know, that's the miracle of the steps. But you become willing to make amends to the principles and the institutions that you've harmed through your character defects. And you actually, if there's one thing I would change in the 9th step, I would put actually made direct amends to those, because there's a lot of sponsors that cut you a lot of slack. And there's a lot of people that go to a lot of step meetings who think all you need to do with the steps is to agree with them in theory, you know, and go to a step meeting or two and share about it. No. The early AAs actually went out and made direct amends. They paid the money back. They knocked on Mrs. McGillicuddy's door, you know, and made direct amends. They went around and they had amends lists, and they checked them off as they made those direct amends face to face. And that's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. I'll tell you one story about the effectiveness of this, because what is the spiritual climate most conducive for the removal of character defects? That spiritual climate is actually going out and making amends. I'll tell one story that illustrates this really good. I was sponsoring this guy. Marty knows him pretty well. I was sponsoring this guy. Lived in the city, grew up like in a murderous kind of a neighborhood. He had just streets all over him, and he ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he ended up as one of my sponsees. And he was coming from a low point, but he was willing to go to any lengths. This guy was as tough as nails, and he was messed up when he showed up at the doors. But he did a really good job in AA. And one day I'm with him, and we're driving to a meeting together, and we stop at a 7-Eleven to get a cup of coffee. And as I'm walking out the door, I look, and out of the corner of my eye, he does this. He grabs a pack of cigarettes on the way out the door. And we're out on the sidewalk, and I'm like, hey, what was that? He goes, whoa. I go, what was that? I saw you grab a pack of cigarettes and put them in your pocket. He goes, yeah. I go, you just stole a pack of cigarettes? He goes, no. I go, what do you mean? I go, I saw you didn't pay for them, did you? He goes, no, they were out front. I'm like, what does that mean? He goes, yeah, they put them in the racks out front. They got a budget for that. They expect you to steal it. You're a chump if you don't take those. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think so. Let's talk about this. So we had a sponsor summit, right? And we came to the conclusion that, yes, indeed, he had been stealing. Now, you know, when your sponsor says, we have to have a talk, you know what that means? Shut up. You're going to listen for a while. That's what it means. Anyway, this guy was willing to go to anything. So what he did was he put about 20 envelopes together with lots of money in those envelopes. And he went around to every single one of these 7-Elevens that he remembered stealing stuff from. And he asked to speak to the manager, and he handed him the cash. And he made every single one of those amends. Let me ask you this question. Do you think he still steals in 7-Elevens? I don't think so. There's a power in these amends that help move us away from these behaviors, these harms that we continue to cause. And the best possible spiritual atmosphere to be in for the removal of the character defects is to actually be making amends for where they've caused harm. How they discovered this in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just absolutely amazing. Okay, so we've gone out and we've made all these amends. What's step 10? Step 10 is the practicing these principles in all your affairs step. Step 10 is that as I move through the day, I need to apply spiritual principles to the things that pop up in front of me. Listen, life is going to hit you. You know, there's going to be problems in life. Just getting sober doesn't mean that everything's going to become comfortable. What we learn is that we learn to apply spiritual principles to the things that pop up in our life, because they work better than what we usually do, which is fight or flight. You know what I mean? It just works a lot better. So that's step 10. Step 11, seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. I want to tell you folks in here that Alcoholics Anonymous is unapologetically about accessing the power of God. That's what AA is about. That's what AA is about. There's wonderful terminology in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. The consciousness of the presence of God will become the most important thing in your life. Seek through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God. Step 11 is about seeking through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God so you can get divine guidance. This is amazing stuff. This is applying the power of God in our lives. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It's just amazing, I think. And step 11 is about seeking that power and learning more about that power and staying on the path toward getting closer to that power. I love step 11. In step 11, it says there's a lot of good books. Talk to some priests, some ministers, some rabbis. Man, I've got a spiritual book collection like you wouldn't even believe. They're not necessarily self-help books. They're more about spirituality. And I gain a lot of comfort in that. Will I ever understand God? I don't think I'll ever absolutely understand God. I don't think that's something knowable. I don't think the human mind can comprehend the breadth and depth of God. I just don't think that that's possible. But you know what we can do? We can seek. We can continue to seek because it's comforting for us. And our real problem as alcoholics is being uncomfortable with ourselves and our environment. So we need to find comfort or else our spirit is going to always be not at peace. Step 12, Alcoholics Anonymous is all about step 12. The first 11 steps prepare us for our job in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps. So I now have an awakened spirit. I've gone through the steps. I have an awakened spirit. If you haven't gone through the steps, you do not have an awakened spirit, and you're walking around asleep thinking you're awake. That's just the truth of it all. Ask anybody that's had a spiritual awakening, and that's what they'll tell you. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these 12 steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. What's the message that we're supposed to carry to the next alcoholic? The message of the steps. The message of the steps. That's what we're supposed to carry. In the early days, I made a lot of mistakes. I would tell somebody, just don't drink, go to meetings, here's my phone number, you know, give me a call when you get in trouble. That's really, really poor help. You know, what I try to do today is I try to get the person, reel the person in, explain to them what alcoholism is. I use the chapter Working with Others. Chapter 7 is a beautiful blueprint and how to help other alcoholics. I'll reel them in. I'll explain to them what alcoholism is. I'll explain to them what the recovery process from alcoholism is. And I'll say, I'm here to help you. Take it or leave it. Because that's really what we need to do. We need to explain to them what alcoholism is. We need to tell them what the recovery process is. We need to tell them we're available. And if they cannot or will not give themselves to this simple program, or they will not work with us on these steps, we're told to let them go. Not in a negative way. Here's my phone number. If you ever want to, you know, do this, I'm available. But, this is what I'm told to do, to take you through the 12 steps. Practicing the principles in all of our affairs, man, that's a tough one. I got to tell you, the good news about that is no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. You know, there's some other good news is it's a journey, and every single day we grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is a journey; it's not a destination. I need to apply these principles, and every single day I get incrementally a little bit better at applying these and a little bit better at being one of God's children. I am unbelievably grateful that Marty, you asked me down here. I hope I spoke a little bit on the recovery process, and thank you all for being here.